That's the sound of two people who are deeply in love just moments before they're going to be married. A beautiful situation, masterfully and tenderly captured in music. This is the only sublimely happy moment these doomed lovers have, but it's just a tiny fraction of the sublimely inspired musical moments to be heard in this great opera. Welcome to the Lyric Opera Commentary on Giuseppe Verdi's Il Trovatore. I'm Jesse Graham, Manager of Audience Education. If you're not already familiar with this opera, get ready for one of the most hair-raising and most gloriously musical works of the 19th century. Il Trovatore, the Troubadour, is set in 15th century Spain during a period of civil war. The characters are a lady-in-waiting of the royal court, a count in the royal court, a lot of gypsies, but one in particular, and the troubadour of the title, who's also a gypsy. Well, sort of. This opera has a horrific backstory, but it's very important. It has to do with the count's brother. When the count's brother was a little child, a strange old gypsy woman was found lurking in his room. The family was sure she'd put a curse on him, so they had her burned at the stake as a witch. But it gets much worse. The terrible spectacle of the old gypsy woman's burning was witnessed by her daughter, who at the time was a young woman with a child of her own. With her agonized dying breath, the old gypsy woman called out to her daughter to avenge her. So the daughter went to the castle, kidnapped the supposedly cursed baby. This is the count's brother we're talking about here. Rushed back to the fire, and then, reliving the horrible sight of her mother's death and her dying command, she threw the child into the flames. Can it get any worse? Maybe you've seen this coming. When the daughter regains her senses, she looks down next to her, and there's the kidnapped child, safe and sound. Lost in her terrible hallucination, she'd thrown her own child in the fire instead of the intended victim. The count's family never saw the boy again, and the father died of heartbreak. But first, he made the count promise never to give up searching for his missing brother. Thankfully, this is just the backstory, and we don't have to witness any of that. But we do hear about it more than once, but more on that later. When the opera begins, the count's an adult, and he's in love with the lady-in-waiting, Leonora. But Leonora has fallen in love with a mysterious knight. He's the troubadour of the title, and his name is Manrico. The count is incredibly jealous of this mysterious troubadour, and he hates him even more when he finds out that he's a leader in the rebellion. They fight a duel, and Manrico the troubadour could have won, but something told him not to kill the count. Later, the count and Manrico meet on the battlefield, but the count doesn't return the favor, and Manrico is left for dead. But he's nursed back to health by his mother, Azucena. Azucena is the gypsy who kidnapped the count's brother and ended up killing her own son instead. But Leonora believes Manrico's been killed, and in order to get away from the attentions of the count, she flees to a convent to become a nun. The count goes to the convent to kidnap her, but Manrico and his men swoop in and rescue her just in the nick of time. By the way, in the original Spanish play, Leonora was already a full-fledged nun by this point, but the Italian censors wouldn't stand for a nun breaking her vows to run off with a man. So in the opera, she's just about to take her vows when Manrico sweeps her away. Honestly, of all the things in this story to object to, but anyway, the war heats up. The count and his men are ready to attack the rebel stronghold where Manrico and Leonora are going to be married. Before the attack, the count's men capture Azucena, and he finds out everything about who she is and what she's done. He orders that she be burned at the stake in direct sight of Manrico's stronghold. Manrico rushes off to rescue his mother just moments before he and Leonora were supposed to be married, but he's captured, and the Count condemns him to death. He's put in the same cell as Azucena, who's spared for the moment, mostly because she's needed in the last scene to deliver the most important line of the story. Leonora pays a visit to the Count and offers a deal. She'll give herself to him if he'll spare Manrico. The Count agrees, but as soon as his back is turned, she drinks poison. Leonora then goes to Manrico's cell to say goodbye and dies in his arms. The Count is so angry, he has Manrico dragged out and executed instantly. And just too late, Azucena delivers the kicker of the whole story by telling the Count that he's just killed his own long-lost brother. Her mother is avenged. Some people think this story is a little over the top. But you've got to admit, if any of this were to happen in real life, people would swear it was like something out of an opera. Verdi's response to criticism of the story was interesting. He said, quote, "They say that this opera is too sad and that there are too many deaths. But after all, everything in life is death. What else is there?" Unquote. The truth is, it's this type of story that makes the perfect medium for grand opera. Verdi said he chose it because it was full of strong situations. Well, that's putting it mildly. But Verdi knew what was needed to create a great opera. Redwood trees don't grow in flower pots, you know. Il Trovatore came hot on the heels of Verdi's terrifically successful Rigoletto, which was a groundbreaking work that challenged the opera establishment in a lot of ways, both musically and dramatically. Bolstered by Rigoletto's terrific success, Verdi developed a radical vision for Il Trovatore. He wrote to his librettist that he wanted a complete break from tradition, that instead of being made up of a string of separate musical numbers, arias, duets, trios, choruses, and so on, an opera ought to be all one single complete piece of music. That was a wild idea to be coming from an Italian composer in the middle of the 19th century. It also didn't really work out that way, especially not in Il Trovatore. Though Verdi had gotten closer to that ideal by the end of his career many years later. The librettist for Il Trovatore was Salvatore Camerano, probably Verdi's favorite librettist ever. But Camerano was old school. The only kind of libretto he wrote, and he did it brilliantly, was the old bel canto style with traditional self-contained numbers, like in the operas of Donizetti and Rossini, and early Verdi. So when Verdi got the libretto, it turned out to be more of the same. Did he send it back for revision? We'll never know if he would have, because Camerano had died while working on the finishing touches. Verdi was shocked and devastated by the loss, and he kept the libretto pretty much the way he got it. To some, the finished opera seems like a step backward from Rigoletto. But what Verdi had actually done was to create the culminating masterpiece of the old format. It's like Il Trovatore is Verdi's breakup kiss with old-fashioned bel canto forms. With no real prelude or overture to speak of, Il Trovatore begins almost immediately with action. Well, not really so much action as storytelling. In this opera, most of the plot is revealed through narration in the form of stories told by one character to other characters. The first scene is a great example, since the whole thing is basically a campfire story. We're outside the Count's castle, it's late at night, and the captain of the guard tells his men the story of the kidnapped baby. Here he is describing the gypsy witch, and the music hints at gypsy style, which we'll hear more of when Azucena tells her side of the story later on.
La
Like all good campfire stories, this one has a great surprise punch at the end. It seems the angry spirit of the burned gypsy always appears at the stroke of midnight. And right after that's said, Verdi has the midnight bell suddenly ring really loudly and rapidly in the orchestra, and the men all panic and scatter to end the scene. It's a strange historical twist that that bell sounds exactly like the one that opens and closes the New York Stock Exchange. In the next scene, we find Leonora in the garden with her maid, and we get another narration. This time, it's Leonora telling the story of how she fell in love with the troubadour. This is a classic soprano cavatina, or entrance aria, in the traditional style. And you'll hear near the end of this excerpt a beautiful rising interval of a sixth, something that occurs in a lot of love arias and duets by a lot of different Italian composers. Verdi does this one better, though, by preceding that beautiful rising sixth with music that seems to be constantly rising already. The finale of Act One is a confrontation between the Count and Manrico and Leonora. As Verdi loves to do in so many of his finales, everyone is singing different words, each expressing his or her own individual feelings about the situation. But here, Verdi uses the music to make it clear who's on whose side. Listen to just a little snippet of it now, and you'll hear what I mean. The Count starts out here by himself, and he sounds very formidable until Leonora and Manrico join musical forces against him. Act Two opens in a gypsy camp with a whole chorus of gypsies. In Verdi's time, popular belief had it that gypsies were all metal workers by trade. So here they're depicted working away, pounding their hammers on, you've got it, anvils, giving us one of the most famous and recognizable choruses in opera. Sound familiar? You bet it does. Verdi knew that a memorable chorus does wonders for an opera's popularity. It works like a commercial jingle. You can't forget it, whether you want to or not. Fortunately, this chorus is no carpet commercial. It's a great piece of music, and the anvils are a nice touch, both musically and visually. After that, we get another story. It's Azucena's version of the story the Captain of the Guard told in Act One. Notice that the music is similar in style to the Captain's version, but it's definitely not the same. From Azucena's point of view, the story is all about the cruel execution of her gypsy mother and the flames of the fire, which we seem to hear in the music.
Oh,
You'll hear that melody again every time Atsuchena remembers that horrible experience. When she's finished, she mutters, "Avenge my death," which is her mantra for the rest of the opera. Alone with Manrico a little later, she confesses the whole story of how she kidnapped the Count's little brother and then threw her own son in the fire. As you can imagine, this is a dramatic high point in the opera. It starts quietly, and in the accompaniment, there's a sobbing figure in the oboe and violin that sounds almost like a child's cry. But the story gradually builds momentum until it reaches a hair-raising climax, with Atsuchena and Manrico both almost shrieking with horror. Here's the end of it. Atsuchena says the memory of it still makes her hair stand on end. Yours will too. Atsuchena's type of mezzo-soprano became a familiar figure in many of Verdi's operas after Il Trovatore, but she was the first, and he loved what he had created with her. In fact, tradition has it that Verdi thought hers was the prima donna role rather than the soprano, Leonora, and that he almost named the opera The Gypsy instead of The Troubadour. Atsuchena is certainly the keystone of the drama, and she's the only character that can't be accused of being typecast. Scene two of this act is the convent scene, and while the Count is waiting to kidnap Leonora, he sings a heartfelt and poetic aria about his feelings for her. This is no two-dimensional villain. But then Manrico bursts onto the scene, to the astonishment of everyone, because he's supposed to have been killed. Leonora wonders if he's come down from heaven. The Count weighs in with characteristic venom. He and Manrico threaten each other, and the tension mounts as everybody else joins in. And it's a big crowd here. Nuns, soldiers, just about the entire cast is on stage now, which in opera can only mean one thing. Time for a big finale. And this one builds to a huge climax. But the genius of it is, it stops cold, absolute silence. And then it builds one more time to the end. You're going to think the recording has stopped in the middle.
Yeah!
Act 3 begins with a classic Verdi men's chorus, all testosterone, all the time, and everybody singing the same thing together, unsullied by any sissy harmony. These are the Count's soldiers, ready to storm the castle where Manrico is with Leonora. Meanwhile, Manrico and Leonora are about to be married. But first, Manrico has one of his big hits of the opera, an aria sung to Leonora to ease her worries about the impending attack. He says that if he's killed, his last thought will be of her, and that he'll only be preceding her to heaven. If I were her, I wouldn't find those sentiments all that comforting. But as always in opera, the music tells a story that words can't. Meanwhile, the Count has captured Azucena and is ready to burn her at the stake. So the Act 3 finale is Manrico and his men gearing up to rescue her. You can imagine the passion that this situation musters. The act really ends with a bang. But a lot of tenors over the years have felt that it's even more of a bang if you add a high C at the end. This tradition began while the opera was still new, and one tenor actually wrote Verdi asking if it was okay to do. Verdi replied, "Go ahead and sing the high C, but you'd better make it a good one." In the first scene of Act 4, we find Leonora outside the Count's castle. She's there to offer herself to the Count in exchange for Manrico's freedom. What happens here musically is another Verdian masterstroke. She sings a slow, heartfelt appeal that Manrico may be comforted and never know of her sacrifice. At the same time, we hear Manrico singing from his cell. It sounds just like a serenade that he sang to Leonora in Act 1, except this time he's singing about dying. Also from offstage, a chorus of monks prays for God's mercy. Every now and then, there's a death knell, and the orchestra plays a dirge-like rhythm underneath it all. Is that enough musical symbolism for you? Musically, that's a lot to grasp all at once, isn't it? Well, what's great about it is that Verdi helps us by spelling it all out ahead of time. First, Leonora sings her part by herself as a gorgeous aria. Then, Verdi gives us just the monks in the distance, and he throws in the death knell for good measure. When they finish, the dirge rhythm starts in the orchestra, and then Manrico sings his serenade to death. Verdi has all these things alternate separately until we've gotten to know them, And then he starts putting them together in different combinations until finally they're all going at once, which is the part you just heard. That is brilliant composition. Leonora makes her offer to the Count, and when he agrees, this disastrous new couple sings a jubilant but ironic duet. She's happy Manrico will live, and he can't believe his good luck at finally winning her. But the reality is, she's already taken the poison, so she's doomed. And he never could have won her love. Here's just the last few seconds to give you a sense of what a brilliant, twisted thing Verdi has done here, a joyous duet that's so terribly tainted. The music of the final scene is so wonderfully crafted and so beautiful, we could have spent this whole commentary exploring each little part of it and seeing how it all fits together into such perfect operatic expression. But it's too late for that now. So, skipping over many strokes of Verdi's genius, let's just focus on the last few minutes. We're in Manrico and Azucena's cell, where they've just sung a beautiful nostalgic duet, when Leonora opens the door and tells Manrico he's free. It's a joyous reunion, but only until Manrico figures out the deal she's made with the Count. Listen to Manrico's outrage here. It's one of the most beautiful, soaring tenor lines of the opera. Later, Azucena joins in, making for one of the most amazing trios ever written. Unless, that is, you count the one that's coming next. When finally the truth comes out, Leonora is dying, Manrico is stricken with guilt for doubting her, and then the Count enters and realizes he's been duped. This is one of those gorgeous miracles that Verdi creates, where a group of characters are feeling and singing about radically different things, and yet together, their voices form the most beautiful and expressive unity imaginable. Leonora dies, and the last part of the story unfolds devastatingly quickly, especially for opera. Over the course of just a few seconds, the Count has Manrico dragged out to the block. Azucena, who had conveniently drifted off earlier, comes to and realizes her son is missing. It must be the very same horrible realization she had all those years ago. The Count drags her to the window just in time to see the beheading. And Azucena delivers her fateful lines. You've just killed your own brother. My mother is avenged. Then Verdi wraps it all up with just a few more notes, and it's over. Of all Verdi's operas, this one was the most popular and successful in the composer's lifetime. Its music literally became the soundtrack of life in Italy. Tunes from it were whistled in the streets, sung by vendors, and played by organ grinders. Even Verdi himself couldn't help but acknowledge its popularity. In a letter, he wrote, "Even in the heart of Africa or the Indies, you will always hear Trovatore." Let's hope he's always right. The singers heard in this commentary were As Leonora, Gabriella Tucci, As Manrico, Franco Corelli. Azucena was Giulietta Simeonato, the Count was Robert Merrill, and the captain of the Count's guard was Ferruccio Mazzoli, all from a recording by the orchestra and chorus of the Opera Theater of Rome, conducted by Thomas Schippers. Original sound recordings of musical excerpts used by permission of Warner Classics. Thanks for listening. I'll see you at the opera.